Hello and welcome to In Stitches, the upholstery podcast telling your story and inspiring others with me, your host, Robbie Richardson. Today I'm sat in Bristol Upholstery Collective interviewing not one student, but three. This is a new one for me and I'm quite excited to do it. And it's lovely to be sat in this amazing building with some fantastic furniture on display. I'm really looking forward to talking to them about that. So my guests today are Anna Gow, Helena Boyamon, and Lucy Courtney Thomas. Welcome, all three.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So, to begin with, I thought it'd be really nice to talk about what you're doing at the Bristol Collective, the Teach Team. Mm. So, do you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll go into the normal routine of the interview?
Okay. Should I start?
Yes.
Hi. Hi, this is Anna. So, Teach Team came about probably about 8 months ago, was it, just at the start of this academic year? And we're actually, what we're doing is helping out on the leisure courses. So Bristol Upholstery Collective have been running a number of leisure courses, obviously during the pandemic when we were in lockdown, those all had to stop. But at the beginning of this academic year, Leanne started those up again. And she asked the second and third year students if any of us would like to get involved so that she could take on more students and we could get more experience. So what we've been doing is, I think there's probably about five or six of us doing it. Obviously, not everybody wanted to get involved. Some of us are being teaching assistants, and then Lucy here has actually been a tutor as well.
Lucy, tell us about being a tutor.
Okay. So, yes. So I got involved. I think I was doing an assistant to Leanne for six weeks. There are night courses, so there's sort of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. So I was assisting her initially for 6 weeks, and then I was thrown into the deep end and did my 6 weeks on my own, which has been really, really difficult. Totally feel the fear and do it anyway. It's exactly that. Yeah. But it's been amazing. Been really, really good. Such great experience. Helena, lovely Helena, as my assistant. Glamorous assistant. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing Teach Team together on Wednesday evenings. So it's normally around about 7 or 8 people come in.
Yeah.
You don't really have any understanding before they come in of their experience.
Yeah.
You have a little bit of understanding of what they're going to bring. So they don't just turn up with a chaise
or a Chesterfield.
Or a Chesterfield or something like that.
You
send them in the other direction and they turn up with a van and start getting a sort of a sofa out.
Yeah.
So you have an understanding roughly of what the projects will be, obviously, with upholstery. Yeah. You don't really know what's going on underneath until you start taking it all apart. So it's really, really good. It's been amazing for me, sort of, you know, coming to the end of my AMU and having my sort of starting my own business, being able to be part of the Teach Team and just learning. You know, it's very, very different to AMU, completely different, but ultimately our training has taught us well, and we are able to draw on all of our sort of knowledge that we sometimes don't trust that we have, but we do. We do have it.
That's such an important part of that, because I think we all think that we're not very good.
Yes,
even people that have been doing it 42 years. And I think it's really good to actually recognize that you can teach it to particularly at beginner level.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why it's been so valuable.
Yeah.
Because we,
you
know,
learn
as
so
you
much.
Say, we, you know, going into it, we weren't sure, can I do this? What do you know? What can I remember? But as soon as you start doing it, you realize you really do know it.
Yeah.
And it really helped. It's really helped us with that, I think. Yeah.
I'd like to bring in your glamorous assistant, Helena.
Hi.
So tell us sort of from your perspective how you found teaching and what's been the challenges, what has been exciting about it?
So I joined Leanne actually initially for some of the weekend courses before Christmas, when we were able to do that kind of thing. And it was very much like Lucy said, see the fear and kind of jump in and kind of get on.
Yeah.
And you do second guess yourself. And I understand what you're saying with the experience. It is just immersing yourself. And you see a wealth of different chairs.
Yeah.
And I know we've all kind of thought about and talked about on your podcast as well with the bench time.
Yeah.
It's just been so invaluable. And as Anna's kind of said, you know, we're taught to such a high level with the AMU, and having that knowledge in your kind of the back of your mind, it's helping that person kind of put together a chair and something that they can be proud of.
And also you're equally giving back, which is just, to spread the word of upholstery and get people interested in upholstery is kind of what this is all about.
Definitely.
Anyway.
So, and they're all so passionate as well when they're here and when they leave. they want to sign up for so much more.
Yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's clearly a lot of interest in craft at the moment, and that's a sustainable side of the things. And I think it's really nice that you've got a situation where you're kind of quite involved with it and you're hands-on, because it's developing your skills and
it's decision-making. It's sort of making quick decisions. Yeah. I know it's helped me massively with my commissions, just knowing, you know, just making quicker decisions, thinking I know where to make it. And that's the thing with AME. For so long, we've watched Harriet, our tutor, amazing tutor. Sort of, she can see things. And I could never understand this for so long. She'd be like, this is where you need to cut this. This is, you know, and it's that experience of thinking, I know this, because I've done it lots of times. It's that repetition.
It's confidence.
Well. Yeah.
And it's good. So, the other side of it, you've got the chair, I've forgotten what it's called.
The chair party.
Tell us a little bit about the chair party.
So the chair party is launching tomorrow, actually, the website. So Leanne's just finishing that. And what that is a platform for the students at Bristol Upholstery Collective to sell the pieces that they're creating through Bristol Upholstery Collective. But she's doing this new brand called the Chair Party. So the pieces that we've been working on for our first year, the pieces that we're working on for our second year, they're going, if we want to, they're going up on the website and we can sell them through that.
That is so brilliant. Isn't that a fantastic idea?
And it's a unique sort of thing. I think obviously testament to Leanne's incredible amount of hard work and her kind of business knowledge and her forward thinking about how we can, as a community, like things with the Teach Team, Chair Party, get our work
but
out there.
But it also
there.
Means that you can continue to live your dream of being an upholsterer, as you were saying, with bench time.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's so difficult. That step is so hard, and that's a massive way of creating that. So it's beautiful.
Because we talk about that all the time. When you've done AMU for 3 years, or, you know, coming up to the end of 3 years, it's that gap between finishing and starting your own business.
Yeah.
There's just
next?
This work. This,
but it's really hard as well, because God knows why, but people are reluctant to take people on.
Yes.
And like, there's a fear that you'll not be quick, that you'll not be as good as them. And get over it, because it's so much more exciting.
Yeah, it's understandable, though. If they're running a business and then taking us on, you know, it's a bit of a...
There's another way of looking at it, though. You've done your AMU course. You've pumped, not been personal, but you've pumped a lot of money into it to gain the knowledge and the skill. Yeah. That is a massive tick box for me to employ somebody.
That's passionate and that invested.
It's giving somebody an apprenticeship, really, isn't it? That's how many people
true.
See it.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Without the bench time, you know, with the best one in the world, how do we get quicker? How do we get better? We need
it's a conundrum.
And
it
would be great if you know, I know yourself does it, you know, if other people would take on apprenticeships, you know, just a day a week.
Well, it's something we will work on over the next few years. And eventually we'll have a network of people,
fantastic.
I'm sure. There's nothing like having ambition, is there? So I'm going to go crack on with the normal thing. Now, what I've decided is that Anna, you're going to go first, and Anna, you're going to go second. And Lucy, you're going to go last.
Okay. Bye.
And what we'll do, we'll just ask the questions and see where we go. Uh-huh. All right. So the usual question, when you were coming up to school leaving age, did you have a career that you wanted to get to do? Did you know what you wanted to do?
No, is the simple answer. So I did a very general sort of set of A-levels. I did maths and business studies.
Far too clever.
Didn't really know what I wanted to do, but went to university and did business studies because at the time, which was how long ago, I'm not going to say, give away my age, it was a good degree to go into a lot of different things. So I just did that until I kind of understood what I wanted to do. I then did some temping, and actually I sort of fell into, by accident, really marketing. So my background really is financial marketing. So I worked for a credit card company. I worked for Lloyds. And what I did with that is I was basically working project planning on their sort of advertising and their brochures. So my background is kind of project planning, artwork layout checking, proofreading, all of that kind of side of things. I wasn't really particularly creative. I didn't feel I was particularly creative. I come from quite a creative family in that both of my parents worked in the theatre. My dad's parents, one was a playwright, one was an actress. So I do come from sort of a creative side. And my mum did a weaving degree when I was at comprehensive. And then she went on to teach weaving at sort of further education and history of design and those sort of things. So okay. She was
so
always very creative.
Yeah.
So I grew up around textiles. I grew up around weaving. I grew up around design. But I think subconsciously, I kind of moved myself away from that. Looking back on it, you know, as kids do, they kind of separate themselves from their parents.
Yeah.
So I didn't sort of particularly feel I was creative. I've kind of come to that later in life.
Yeah.
Really. So.
Which probably is in a way, more of a discovery, I suppose,
about
yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really come through my hobbies, which we can talk about later if you want.
Yeah. Alina, your turn.
So when I was younger, I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Okay.
Randomly. And then I kind of got a bit older and then wanted to get into music, loved music. So I wanted to be artist in repertoire.
Yeah.
Had the age-old conversation with my school kind of work teacher, and she kind of laughed at me and said, you'll never get into that. So I went to college and just basically got a job. And I've been in HR for 20 years. So my background is HR.
Okay.
Yeah. My parents weren't really creative.
Yeah.
Both are chefs.
That's quite creative.
Yeah, I suppose, but not kind of in this kind of realm, I guess.
No, but you still got to be creative if you're a chef.
True.
Yeah.
My dad and my uncle were very much into antiques. So I was always surrounded by kind of smelly old furniture.
Things changed.
No, so nothing has changed. But yeah, I think it's just kind of the love from all of that, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of brought me to this point.
Okay. But so HR was just a job? Or did you...
Well, I've been to uni, I've done all of, you know, whatever I needed to do, and I'm kind of running my own business at the moment, but, it is doing what it needs to do for me at the moment.
Yeah. Lucy.
Hello. So I don't have a particularly creative background, have a particularly creative family. So I was at college doing A-levels in maths and economics.
Oh, God, another clever one.
I was 17 and I met my husband, and obviously... wasn't my husband at the time, but I met my now husband. And so that honestly totally shaped the next however long of my life. We weren't living in the same part of the country.
Okay.
We wanted to be together. This is a story of love rather than creativity.
It's good. We all have a story about love.
So we wanted, we wanted to be living together. So we wanted to be working. So I left college, much to my parents, it wasn't a good time in that respect.
Yeah.
But, 27 years later, we're still together, so, work out how
something
old
right.
I am. Yes. So
18. So I told you I was good at maths.
I wish. I don't wish I was 18 again. So, yes, very much, we wanted to sort of have our, a house and things, so we worked. So I put myself into whichever job meant that I could train, get some qualifications whilst working. Initially, it was sort of pensions, payroll. It was very but I did enjoy it for the first sort of 10 years of my life.
But you were quite driven.
I was, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, because I had these other outside factors that I wanted to be able to support. So I wanted to be able to work, and James did exactly the same. And, looking back, it was quite hard, but actually now it's benefited us because, we've been on a mortgage since I was like 18, and all those sorts of
things. Yeah.
So then I continue through doing various different things, facilities management, nothing particularly, groundbreaking, but worked as hard as I could, got every promotion that I could, did every bit of training I could to better myself. And then I had our daughter and then became a stay-at-home mum for 10 years. So it's about, I think she was 10, Florence was 10 when I sort of thought, right, I need something else. I need to go back. I did not want to go back to the 9-to-5, didn't want to go back into an office.
Yeah.
I come from quite a creative family. My mum's a seamstress, grew up around her sort of making her clothes, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Still makes curtains, blinds, that kind of thing. My dad is a car trimmer.
Oh, gosh.
So, I've always been, that's been.
So there was something going on.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. And then my brother's a street artist. So, quite a successful street artist who does commercial projects and that kind of thing. He's not Banksy. All the time.
Amazing, would that be?
So I can reveal.
No, that's not the case.
But yes, there was definitely, I was surrounded by creativity.
Yeah.
And I happened to read a magazine one day and I was looking through and there was an interview with a lady that had gone to night school doing upholstery, and it was literally, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but it was a light bulb moment. And I thought, that is what I need to do.
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
So, Anna, we'll go back to you. Go back to the beginning.
Yep.
So, how did you make the change from what you were doing into upholstery? What was the triggers? What happened?
So, my creative side started to come out when I was doing a hobby, which was historical reenactment. So I got involved in historical reenactment when I started going out with my partner, who I've now been with for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And we were doing, he ran a group that did sort of 5th, 6th century period reenactment.
Right.
So what we used to do there is we would spend a lot of summer weekends at English Heritage properties and National Trust properties, and we would set up a sort of living history camp where we would all do different crafts.
Yeah.
And we would also then take up large bits of steel and batter the out of each other to entertain the public. So
sounds fun.
It was fun. Yeah. It was great. I spent about 10 years doing this. So it was a lot of, used to do spear work. I used to do a lot of archery. I used to do a lot of sword work, that sort of stuff.
Okay.
In small groups, but also what I did was craft. And the craft that I decided to get involved in, and obviously this was sort of some sort of influence from my mum, was the textile side of things.
Yeah.
So I used to do dyeing with plants.
Yeah.
I used to do drop weight loom weaving, and I used to do tablet weaving, which is the sort of small decorative braid that people used to use. So I spent lots of time doing that. Really, really enjoyed it. And that was when I was sort of in financial industry sector for my job. Then some personal circumstances changed, and I decided I wanted to change my job. I wanted to get out and do something that wasn't in an office. So I did archaeology for a bit. And while I was doing that, I also started, I know this is a bit of a long-winded thing.
That's fine,
I also
that's fine.
Then started,
long-winded's good.
I started volunteering for a local charity.
Yeah.
And I started doing a creative outlet there by doing window dressing and things like that. And I ended up working for them, actually taking on a role there and becoming a manager for their eBay shop. This is a local charity to Bristol. And as I was doing that, I stopped doing the archaeology, which meant I stopped doing the textiles.
Yeah.
So I stopped doing the reenactment because I stopped doing the textiles. And I wanted another sort of creative outlet, having found that creative outlet.
Yeah.
And around that time, we were clearing my nan's house out because she'd passed away. And I got a couple of chairs from hers, which I'd always remembered as being the chairs that I used to like sit on when
We've all got that story.
And
it's
these
lovely.
These I've since discovered are Jeep and TV chairs.
Yeah.
Pair of these. Didn't know what they were at the time, obviously. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be nice if I could do those myself rather than getting somebody else to do them? So I started doing some evening classes in Bristol there's a place called the Stoke Croft Adult Learning Centre, which the council them. Like get loads of people to do evening classes there.
Yeah.
And I was doing the upholstery course, the evening course there. And as soon as I started doing it, I just thought, I love this. I just kind of got hooked at that point.
That moment of connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever it is a very beautiful thing.
And at the time, I still haven't done my nan's chairs because I don't know. It's like that kind of, again, the fear of, am I good enough to do my nan's chairs? Yeah. So I kind of like picked up chairs, you know, from charity shops and just got them cheap on eBay. Marketplace, that sort of thing. And so I've done a few there, but all the things I was doing, they were all kind of modern pieces. It was all foam related, and I could see other people doing traditional pieces, and I was thinking it'd be really nice to kind of get involved in that.
Yeah.
And at that point I just thought I would like to take this a bit further, so I just started looking around for what other courses there were. Came across Bristol Upholstery Collective, came across the diploma. Unfortunately, I discovered this, I think it was something like 2 weeks after the application date for that particular year,
right,
which was Lucy's year actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept bothering, Leanne. Like every few months, I'd email her going, "When's the next year? When's the next year? When's the next year?" And at the time, she was trying to move in here as well. So she was just like, "Hold on, I'll tell you as soon as I know."
Yeah.
And yeah, I just started doing. That's why I wanted to sign up for the diploma.
So how long ago?
So I'm currently in my second year.
Second year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So halfway through my second year.
Okay.
So my HR career was coming to a point where I needed to leave a certain company. They were offering redundancy.
Yep.
And I think the story for many of the listeners is probably the same, coming out of the corporate world. And I just thought there needs to be more to life. I kind of reached 40, had that kind of moment. had a moment.
I think we've all had those.
Took voluntary redundancy. And then I was just lost. I kind of thought I need to do something. and started here. So came to do some of the leisure classes with Leanne.
Slow down. How did you find here?
So funnily enough, watching Money for Nothing, repair shop. Right. And I just thought, I need to do something with my time to kind of have that secondary kind of outlay, I guess, the creative side.
Yeah.
I knew that I'd have to keep HR going, so I kind of started to set up my own business and just thought, I'll have a look to see what's in Bristol. Found the Bristol Upholstery Collective, realised it was Leanne, and then started to do the leisure classes with Leanne and Harriet at the time, in the daytime. And like Anna said, it's that kind of connection. You kind of lose yourself and forget your daily woes. And, do you know what I mean?
All these years on, I still get that.
Do you?
When I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
That's really good to hear, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's less so these days because I'm less on the bench. But when you get in that moment, it's because just everything goes.
It does.
There's no time.
Yeah, it does.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it kind of, you know, with that in my mind, I just thought I wanted to do then the diploma. Mm-hmm. I like to learn things.
Yeah.
So having something, the credibility, I guess, behind me.
Yeah.
So hence second year, Anna and I are in the same class. On a Wednesday, Wednesday Dream Team.
I take it you didn't make it onto the Wednesday group then?
No,
no.
I'm Friday, third year, so I
Okay.
Yeah, and here we are, kind of second year in, still loving it. Yeah, and kind of met some fab people along the way, which is great.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So go on then, Lucy. Hit it.
Where was I? So yes, I was looking through this magazine and completely inspired to get into, I saw this woman had done the AMU and then started a really successful business. I thought that's just it. I can imagine doing that. I don't know why. I just thought I might have hated it, but I don't hate it.
But you wanted to try.
I wanted to try. So I put the magazine down, literally put the magazine down.
Can I ask what the magazine was? Do you remember?
It was Country Homes and Interiors. It was my mother's magazine. And she'd lent it to me saying, Lucy, have a little look through there. There might be something. And it was actually, she should have the credit because she had read it already. And she knew that it might, if I was flipping through, it might pique my interest. And it did. Because she knew I was looking for something creative to do. I Googled courses and Bristol Upholstery Collective came up and I was very lucky because it was literally 2 weeks before they started their diploma. I remember it was a Friday evening and I was like, oh no, I'm not going to have a space. I need to email her quickly. And I got very lucky and there was a space. And so that was when they were at a different venue from here. So I did my first year there in Barton Hill and then moved here for the second year, I guess. I'm now on my third year. But I mean, it was an instant. I loved it right from the start. I loved everything about it. I love the fabrics. I love the creativity. It's a particularly creative atmosphere here, very collaborative, very supportive, amazingly talented tutors, Harriet and Tom.
Yeah.
Harriet's our tutor.
Yeah.
Just really skillful people.
Yeah. So knowledgeable though, aren't they?
Yes.
And with their background as well, with what they bring to
definitely,
the AMU,
definitely.
It's just amazing.
And, which is nice. And also, I guess you're just feeding off their love of the craft 100%. As well.
And they're so supportive as well.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly with Leanne. She's over there.
Who?
Leanne. You know, she's very invested in our futures as well. And that really comes across.
Yeah.
She's always looking forward to making sure that we have a way to make a viable business for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why are we doing it? I mean, I think on the whole, it's not a hobby for most of us, I would say. I don't think you invest that much time and energy and money if you're not looking to get something out of it at the other end.
And in terms of how you've been learning and developing, what has been sort of like the hardest thing to get your head around and what has surprised you? So what have been those sort of...
I think for me, one of the hardest things is the sewing outside of things, just because I'd never used a sewing machine before I started this course.
The sewing machine?
Sewing machine side of things.
Yeah.
So that's not something I'd ever done before.
Yeah.
It wasn't a skill, you know, all of my creative skills were hand skills, the very, you know, the old craft stuff. So coming up and doing that has been a huge learning curve.
Yeah.
in some respect, everything has, obviously, because it's a completely new craft that I've been getting into. The sewing machine still frightens me, I would say.
Yeah.
Still, and I think I just need much more practice on it to kind of get that. I mean, with everything, you just need the practice,
don't
you?
Yeah, you do. I mean, I don't know why I'm going to turn this about me, but I am, just for 2 minutes. But when I started, one of the things I had to do was make lift curtains, which I have spoken about before. And I was using a machine that had a needle in it and the size of my little finger. It was an enormous thing. And you know, it's really terrifying. Mm. When you've used a machine like that, which was huge, the other machines somehow don't seem so daunting. But it's just, I mean, also machines today with servo motors and so on, they're so easy to use.
Yeah.
You're very lucky, honestly.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you, I mean, there are people who've come to the course who've done a lot of sewing before.
Yeah.
So that side of thing kind of comes naturally to them.
But for
somebody who hasn't used a sewing machine before, they can be quite daunting things to look at.
And I guess you feel that someone's using a machine better than you, and you might feel if a bit intimidated by that, which you shouldn't, because we're all learning.
No, we are all learning. But I mean, in terms of the sort of hand skill side of it, I think you get this from, probably had this from all the students really, but one of the surprising things is just how much there is involved.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, not having done any traditional before I came here, as I said, the pieces I've done at evening class were foam based.
Yeah, yeah.
So the traditional side of things is just, I was just surprised by how involved it was, it is, which I'm loving. I'm absolutely loving it, but it is very involved. And also,
it's like archaeology in reverse.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. But also I'm surprised by how much we've picked up so quickly. I mean, the first year is so packed with so many things.
Yeah.
It's not just your two assessed, you know, chairs and your research project, which the later years really are.
Yeah.
The first year is so involved. There's so much going on. And we've just picked it all up. So obviously only to a certain level, and we're always going to be improving and always learning more.
Yeah.
But it's picking up those basic skills so quickly. It's been amazing.
Yeah. I think it's one of the brilliant things about the ANUSF course, to be honest, because obviously there are lots of schools with people learning the craft in a pretty advanced way. I never had that opportunity. It's amazing.
Yes.
Same question to you.
So for me, it's the seeing what needs to happen. And I think you and another student have spoken about it previously, and you've kind of given that advice of just stepping back. And it's understanding what needs to be pulled or cut so that it lays nice and flat and there's no wrinkles. And it's that kind of aspect that always fascinates me with Harriet, that she can look at something and she'll pull a different piece of the arm and then it just magically disappears and it just looks fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think doing the teach team has actually helped with an aspect of that, just so, because you see so many different chairs, you're having that kind of that touch and feel of other people's fabrics, you kind of get to understand it a bit better.
It's also that sort of understanding that 3D image of cutting and the movement of the chair. And for some people, it's really obvious, and others, not so much.
No.
Yeah.
And it comes again with the experience, which, you know, I know you've spoken about before, and Harriet's obviously got. But yeah, definitely that for me.
Yeah.
You know, and the same with what Anna said, and other students, it's the sewing, it's the hand sewing, you know, and how much work goes into a traditional piece and actually how rewarding it is.
Yeah.
That was, I underestimated that completely.
Yeah.
But love
it. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of the reward that I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. Because that's all about finish as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's definitely a rewarding experience. Yeah. I sort of feel, especially the teach team, that what I've come to realise, because there are so many chairs out there, so many different styles, you never really know what you're going to get. But what I'm slowly learning is that my teaching, or my training, I should say, has given me an understanding of where I need to get to, ultimately. Structure, finish, you know, it's, and obviously we start in this one place, and I realise I've got enough information that I know where I need to get to. And I've got enough stored in here, and it's not always going to be the exact same way every time. There are ways you can. So it's about sort of improving on what we know, or, you know, sort of using the knowledge that we have to be able to just get to a finished product. And I realise that it's not, right, I need to get my notes out and do it in exactly the same way, because you can't do that with every chair. You can't apply what we've been taught to absolutely everything. But it's realising and having the confidence to know that you know where you need to get to, the structure you're trying to create, the shapes, the edges, the finish.
So, interesting because you're quite new to the whole trade. In terms of teaching it, how have you been able to explain cut movements and stuffing? And so how have you found that in terms of
it's very difficult. Everybody comes to the leisure craft courses with a very different, you know, some of them may have never even picked up a hammer.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of them are sort of like, wow, I didn't, you know, they don't necessarily have any understanding of making or, you know, crafts. So you just get a feel, don't you, for each student and how much they can do. But trying to get that across to them, I mean, it is a lot of demonstration to start with.
Yeah.
You know, it might be that you do three corners and let them do the fourth.
Yeah.
Saying that, some prefer to actually do it themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it does depend massively on the student. Because again, it's all about confidence. Mm. And some people just have it in abundance and some don't.
And you do need to judge that. I mean, some, you know, some of them have the confidence and also some of them are much quicker. Mm.
I'm just really interested, I guess, in that whole teaching, because when teaching is fresh, the prospect of teaching strikes me as being possibly a lot easier in some respects because you've learnt from your tutor.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see there's pitfalls as well, but you've always got people in the background helping you, haven't you?
Yeah. I guess they knew everything is so much slower. The process is much slower. You're learning in a much more kind of structured way. Yeah. With leisure courses, I mean, the weekend leisure courses here are insane. I mean, what Leanne does to these chairs in, you know, 2 days. It's and that is absolutely, and you're literally hour by hour watching and you're thinking, right, these six people all need to be at a certain stage. And that is frightening. But, you know, you do it, you get through it and you kind of encourage them to. And it's not going to be, sometimes they are, sometimes they churn out amazing work.
Yeah.
I actually prefer the 6 week course because you have time to go, okay, debrief, you know, we have time to think about it and plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
You prefer the other way.
On the other side, on the flip, I actually prefer doing the weekend. So I did a weekend first as an assistant before I did a 6 week block with Leanne. And what I found with the weekends where you didn't have, or I didn't have time to doubt myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you have to get them through it. So you have to just do it.
Yeah.
Whereas when it came to the evening classes, it was much more leisurely and much more laid back. And I found myself being able to question my own decisions much more.
I understand that. Although,
less sure of myself.
In a way, though, that's challenging you because you've got to come up with answers.
Yes.
Which is, you know, particularly when you're, is this right? And you've got to come up with answers.
Yeah. You know. But it was much easier to doubt myself, I think. I didn't have time to doubt myself on the other ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
So sort of moving on, I know this is quite a bizarre question for some of you, but do you feel like your previous career, the things that you've done, have helped in any way in the trade?
Yeah, I was thinking about this when obviously listening to the podcast, you kind of know what questions you're going to ask.
And I thought they all came as a surprise.
And I think we've all been desert island discing for like a while. I think
three favourites.
Yeah, I think some of them have actually. I mean, it is, you know, sometimes it's difficult when you've been in a career that isn't creative at all.
Yeah.
You have to really think about it. You know, what skills have I been able to transfer? But for me, I think it's things like attention to detail.
Yeah.
And also planning, that sort of always saying one step ahead, because with the layers that you're doing specifically in traditional, you've got to think about where you're placing tacks or staples to then be able to have room for the next one. Or, you know, I've got to do this bit before I've got to do that bit. So you're almost having to look three or four steps ahead of where you're actually working. And in terms of my sort of project planning and being able to see where I'm going with that, I think that's really helped. Actually transfer to this.
Yeah.
And obviously also, as I said, the attention to detail with things like proofreading and artwork setting. Again, it's just that attention to detail of the finish and things like that.
Yeah.
So definitely.
I suppose from mine, being HR, lack of creativity there, but it's the process.
Yeah.
I love a process.
Yeah.
And to me, to kind of go from each stage, you know, helps massively.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always had a passion for, you know, old smelly furniture, like I've said. Yeah. You know, ranging from my...
I hate the new stuff, but give me smelly furniture. Oh, I love it.
There's a dead animal in there, and I love it even more.
Yeah.
So I think that has kind of given me that passion as well from that side.
Yeah.
So process and pre-loved furniture.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
It's process for me as well. I look at so many chairs. I spend my life just kind of looking at pictures of chairs, thinking about the process. How have they upholstered them?
Yeah.
Do that all the time. Even in a shop, I'll be thinking, which way around have they, you know, I'm really careful now when I'm actually stripping down that I document the process in reverse so that I know what needs to happen, the layers.
Yeah.
I think for me, certainly now trying to sort of set up my own business, communication skills from my previous life, you know, being able to communicate to, you know, lots of people.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not necessarily doing it. It's like one person at a time. But having that kind of confidence to be able to talk to people on a social level when you're sort of going out doing visits and things and doing quotations. So, I mean, that's tricky, that side of things, especially from a timing perspective and having time to do that element.
We'll cover this in a minute because I quite like to talk to you about that in a bit more detail. But what I quite like to just touch on is this question, and it's interesting because you're all teaching, which I think is might be more insightful than perhaps some of the others, without being rude to any of the others. You're all beautiful people, honest. But the question we always ask is, what advice would you pass on? And obviously, being students, we're turning it around. What advice would you like to ask? What advice do you think would be relevant for students coming through? So not just from your own perspective, but what advice do you think is needed?
I would say be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Because we're all such perfectionists. Mm. We beat ourselves up over things when they're not going right. And I think you've got to remember that you are just learning and it takes a long time to perfect these things. You know, tears have been shed over all of these chairs. And I think sometimes we are too hard on ourselves and we need to, it's, as I said, the first year especially is such a huge learning curve in terms of the amount of skills you're learning.
Yeah.
And then in the second year, you're suddenly applying those skills to actual chairs. And I think you just have to take a step back sometimes and just think, okay, I've not got it 100%, but I'm still learning. I think we forget that sometimes.
Yeah, so yeah, totally. Yeah,
I think it's be kind to yourself. I
love that as a piece of advice, actually. You know, instinctively we beat ourselves up because we're not good enough.
Yeah,
and sometimes
absolutely.
You just have to say, actually, I've done the best that I can.
Exactly.
And be happy with that. Yeah.
For me, it's the what next? So we've done our stage 3 AMU. It feels like there needs to be something more for me.
Yeah.
You know, I love to learn.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know specifically how to use, I don't know, Pirelli webbing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that.
Yeah.
Think about the element of sustainability. There's always going to be a chair that you've never touched before or has, you know, an aspect in there that you have no clue. It's all well and good looking on YouTube,
as I've said before, YouTube, if you can find the right video, is great, but discernment is impossible with YouTube because there are so many of them, and a lot of them aren't really worth watching without being rude.
I agree totally.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, it would be, you know, filling that gap.
Yeah.
Obviously, the bench time, as we've spoken about, is 100% important. But
I think that I go on about this every bloody episode, but the bench time is an absolute key element to all of it. It really is. It's how you develop your skills, and it's the one thing you can't pay for. Lucy.
So what's the question? We're talking about advice to anybody wanting to get into the trade? Or?
Yeah, so just the advice that, because, you know, we always ask the question, what would you pass on? So it's what would you think would be good advice to receive? You know, turning the
question around. I mean, on a very sort of basic level, do it. If you're interested in the whole street, if you're interested in learning, it's the AMU course, it's not for the faint-hearted. It's not. No. And I think...
And neither should it be.
No, absolutely not. No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
It's all encompassing, I think it is. I think probably most of us feel like that. It takes over in a good way. I think for me, the sort of thing that really stands out in terms of the AMU stuff is the research projects. They're tricky.
Yeah.
They're really, really tricky. I mean, we've all had the last, we've just handed in, mine's over there. I can see it open over there. That's hard work, you know.
Yeah.
And it is that sort of, it is a real mix. It is obviously a huge amount of practical, but a huge amount of written work.
I will say to you, that side of things is so important.
It is.
It's something never had in my training. My training in that area is quite lacking.
And we are lucky here. Yeah. We have a huge amount of support from Harriet as we're going. We have this thing at the beginning of the term where we all are given a certain section to go off and research, and then we bring back our findings. that's a really, really good process here. But it is massively important. And I think we always have this sort of, oh, it's only what's always been 10% of the mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I've learned a huge amount from
this. And it's, I'm about as academic as a peanut, but that style of learning is equally as important as time on the bench, because it's giving you a flavour of what the history is and what, you know, and it's so important if this trade is going to develop and move on.
Absolutely.
But my other advice would be just get a chair and just try. Just do it.
I think actually at this point, because we did talk about people bringing Chesterfields in, and I think it would be quite good to point out that the ideal chair to start on would be a dining chair.
Absolutely.
We've
said that, haven't we, on the leisure courses. We have just six dining room chairs.
Drop-in seats or something. Let's start simple. Always start simple.
But there's still a huge amount of value in that. I mean, people want dining room chairs done all the time, drop-in seats and things.
But you're learning. You learn so much from it.
Exactly.
Anna.
Hi.
I'm good with names.
You should just say 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Number one.
What are your aspirations? Where do you want to go with this?
I think I'm still feeling that, you know, feeling my way with that. I would like, I unlike these two, I haven't started doing any commissions yet.
Yeah.
I would like to take on some commissions just to gain my confidence and get more time. My initial thought had been that I would start my own business.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm not sure if I don't feel I'm ready to do that yet. I would like to at some point.
Yeah.
I think I would like more time on the bench, potentially volunteering or working with somebody, even if it's just one day a week to start with, just to get some more experience and to get my speed up as well. I mean, I know you've talked about that with other people before. You know, the thing is to get the speed up without dropping the quality.
I think if you can get a placement somewhere, your speed will naturally come. It just happens. I've experienced it with many students having come through my workshop, and from my perspective, it's a joy to see.
Yeah,
you know, to see someone do a chair quickly. Oh no, it's not so much about quickly, but doing it much quicker than they did it originally without any compromise on quality. That's lovely.
The other thing is that with the way that the course is structured, obviously we did our dining chair first, so that was traditional.
Yeah.
And then we did our box, which was modern. And then we did our park and all, which was modern. And we're only now getting back to traditional.
Yeah.
And also because of the way that things have happened because of the pandemic, because of the lockdowns, that's been a much more extended process than it normally would have done. So I suddenly feel like I almost feel like I'm back in traditional for the first time, because it's been so long since I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it. And I'm enjoying it to the extent at the moment that I'm wondering whether I'd actually like to pursue the conservation side of things.
Sorry, I'm good with names.
So, and I think that's partly because of kind of my historical interest and the hobbies that I've had previously, and the fact that I'd really like to like work more with like old textiles. I think that side of things I might like to get into.
Yeah.
So I'm currently exploring the possibility of restoration courses and things like that as well.
Okay. That's really interesting. Mm. Helena?
I'm in the process of setting up my own business.
Yeah.
I've worked on a couple of pieces just for friends and family, just more for practice really. Yeah. So my view would be to give up HR and do this full time, because my kind of few days a week HR is just paying the bills and helping me get through with this, really, all my training. Yeah. So that would be my kind of outlook for setting up a business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been taking on commissions for about 18 months, although between stage one and two here, we had a bit of a break because of sort of a rejig with calendars and that kind of thing. So I couldn't bear to be without my one day per week here for 9 months. So I did leisure courses between that time, and I did a mix of traditional things and a traditional chair, two traditional chairs and a modern project. But I did them as commissions, or one of them certainly was a commission. So it paid for itself. So I didn't make any money from it, but somebody I knew to do a chair, and I thought, right, I'm going to take it in and do it as leisure, but it will be the commission. So I obviously had some guidance with it. It's Park and Knoll, and that was my first commission, really.
Yeah.
And then it's just grown from there.
Okay.
And now I have quite a bit of work coming up, so it's all good.
Brilliant.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I've got my own studio at home, so that works really well. Outside of my house.
All I was going to say, because I mean, all three of you are quite smart cookies, but coming from learning upholstery to running a business
is a huge gap.
Yeah, I just wonder how you feel about, because there's, you know, you have to manage your customers, you've got to manage your finances,
and it's all things like trade accounts, and we talk about this a lot. Actually, it's that gap between, you know, you finish AMU and then you go, I mean, I've got my last project to do, last traditional piece to do. So that's another side of things, trying to balance that, because it's actually flipped the other side for me the other way now. For the longest time, I would walk out to the workshop and think, I'll do my AMU stuff because that is my work and it's only me that's judging it, not me that's judging it. But then when you've got paid work as well, I'd ignore it. But it's flipped the other way now. Yeah. That's my full-time job.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to fit in my last bit of my third year. So it's become a bit of a, and the problem with having a workshop at home is that I'm in there till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night working.
Which isn't sustainable, by the way.
I know, it's absolutely not. But yeah, I think for us that things like getting trade accounts, getting people to take you seriously, when you're a one-man band as well, you know, the reality is you're not going to be placing hundreds of pounds worth of orders every single month because you don't have enough work coming through, even if you've got constant work. So that's been tricky for me, putting myself out there and sort of not good at selling myself. And so going around to top trade people and saying, getting fabric accounts set up. Not so much dealing with clients. I think I'm okay with that, sort of potential customers and things. But it's honestly, it still feel like a complete imposter. Even though I'm just throwing myself into it every day. Just
welcome
keep going.
To imposter syndrome. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah.
But also still learning. I mean, we've just booked onto a wood restoration course, haven't we? To sort of, you know, just to carry on, just keeping those little bits of learning coming in. Yeah. Love to do caning as well. The caning, chair caning. Yeah. That's something else we'd like to do.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah.
But then also with Leanne here, as the business expands, the upholstery service, we're potentially going to have that as another revenue of another sort of stream of work coming through, which is amazing. Yeah. I mean, she's trusting us with her brand and her business.
Good for her.
Absolutely.
So, Anna and Helena, how have you found it? Anna, you obviously haven't done it yet, but have you thought about that process of setting up the business and how you're going to, because there's so much to juggle.
There is a lot to juggle. I think everybody has different skills that can bring from their old work.
Yeah.
So I think everybody will find sort of some bits easier than others. I think one of the great things about our group here, and I'm sure it's the same with other schools, and you know, with Helen last week saying they've just set up the collective, I think we all support each other well. So I think it would be amazing if we could all sort of like get a workshop together, like Helen and the guys at St Albans have just done. Because then you can do your own pieces. You can do, you know, larger pieces together. You can kind of support each other with those bits of, you know.
And it's quite lonely doing it by yourself day in and day out.
It is very lonely.
It is very lonely. It's one, when I set up on my own, it's the hardest, because I'm not very good in my own company. I talk too much. I find it very difficult to be on my own like that because it's just very insular.
Such an insular craft and business, which I think is one of the fantastic things about what you've been doing with this and also with the magazine that you're going to be launching, because it is going to be bringing people together a lot more.
Enough about me already.
But I think even with the business side of things as well, it's like, you know, I might have certain skills that Helena hasn't got and she's got certain skills that I haven't got. So, you know, you can help each other with those sort of things.
Which is forever learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the thing you find about the students generally. It is a really supportive network. Yeah. I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, every schools as well.
Every student I've spoken to, I've had a very
similar
response.
We've all seemed to have each other's back and we appreciate each other's work. And
I mean, the WhatsApp groups, you know, messaging each other at 11 o'clock at night going, oh my God, this project, you know, all of that sort of just like, you know, what would you do? What would you do? You know, there's all that kind of support for each other.
So who inspires you, Anna?
I think different people inspire me for different things. So there's not sort of like one person, because there's just, you know, there's sort of so many different aspects to things.
The question is very much directed in terms of upholstery.
Yeah, but I mean, there's even different aspects of that. Yeah. So, you know, for example, like Leanne's creativity is just amazing. You know, she can kind of look at something and just turn it into something else in her head and just create it. Do you know what I mean?
And
that's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. But then sort of people like sort of like Greg and Ian, you know, you kind of look at their stitching and, you know, especially if that's something I really want to get into and like looking at the way that they do it and the perfection of that, it's just like, it's just something to aspire to. It really is. And it makes me want to improve.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then somebody like Harriet, I mean, the patience that she has for all of us and the patience that she has with herself, as I said about being kind to yourself, it's just that. I sort of look at her sometimes and go, okay, I need to be like, I need to step back and I need to kind of breathe and take a moment. So it's kind of different people for different things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Helena.
Just to expand really on what Anna said. So
for me, Leanne's drive in setting up what she set up here.
Yeah.
From a bunch of hammers, doing some leisure classes, to, you know, how she's kind of grown this business massively over such a short space of time. I'm just, you know, generally in awe of Harriet and Tom, you know, everything that they bring to the class, like Anna said, their patience, what they can do, you know, and turn things into is just phenomenal. I did the week course here way before COVID with Armand. His stitching is
we bonded over the whole the stool, so he, didn't we? Yeah. We did the Armand.
So he did stitching with you. He didn't use foam like he normally does. Yeah. Hope you're listening,
Armand. He was pretending that week. But that was intense. 5 days, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that with him. It was
the
brilliant.
Stool course.
Yeah. Not the stool. No, I did back.
Okay,
back,
we'd like to do that. That's how we met, isn't it?
He was, for me, he was a very inspiring guy. And he's like 20 years younger than me, bugger. But it just shows that it's got nothing to do with experience. It's got everything to do with knowledge, which I love. Yeah, yeah. You know, we often forget that.
His story is quite interesting, actually, how early he got into monastery. Very different here.
So, what part of the craft would you most like to master?
Stitching.
Such a common answer.
Stitching.
Modern.
I was going to say, and pattern matching.
And pattern matching. Yeah. That's come up before. Yeah.
Modern stuff. Not foam. The bits in between. Your mid-century kind of
bits.
Sprung units and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that transitional period is really interesting, I think.
Definitely. And that was my point earlier. The what next? That to me is the gap for me.
Because I don't know if you've done a Papa Bear chair or anything like that, but they're really interesting because they are right in some of them are right in that transitional period between sort of the traditional and the modern, and there's sort of crossover is really interesting.
And there's definitely a gap there for training from a training perspective, but there is an out there to teach that kind
AMU if you're listening.
Probably boring stitching for me.
Why is that boring? That's a really interesting response.
No, not at all. No, I mean, because it's we all say it. Yeah.
It's the key element of the job, isn't it? It's the part of the job that makes the job brilliant.
It's so funny. Every time I sort of approach a traditional piece, which hasn't been that much, but I mean, you know, and I always think, right, this is the time. Yeah. The stitches are going to be perfect and they're just not.
But it's interesting though, because I mean, it's got nothing to do with time, as I just said, but I've been doing it a long time. And the one thing I still struggle with is actually stuffing.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
And like, you know, you'd think
I should
have
said that.
Yeah.
I always...
You can have it. I'll say it.
I'll take it from you.
Lucy.
Yeah, I've decided I've changed my mind. It's stuffing.
Yeah. But it's a real art to getting the right amount of hair and getting the right
Totally agree with you. Yeah. And some people definitely have that ability over others. Back to our stage three, I was doing our traditional piece, our sew arms. Two of us have got quite similar chairs, Edwardian chairs. And Hannah, bless her, just put it all in and it was like a mat. It was perfect. I'm just like, I've got gaps. What's going on? I've done this so many times.
Do you know, I remember when I first started and my boss used to come up and he'd put his fingers in. He'd say, you've got a massive hole there. What are you doing? And he's like,
but you've just made
that
hole.
Yeah, exactly. And I could never. It took me a long time to work out how to sort that out.
Yeah. I'm always a bit careful with the whole teasing thing, and that's one thing from Armand's course. I mean, he literally just teases it until it just sort of just sort of grows.
I don't want to big him up too much, but he has got a remarkable way of teasing. Your little tease. So Lucy, who inspires you?
Probably my dad is my biggest inspiration from an upholstery perspective.
Yeah.
Just because he's so talented, so gifted, his machine skills are immense.
Yeah.
And he's a big inspiration for me. So,
and he clearly sort of very supportive and helpful, which is lovely. Yes, very much so.
So yes. Good.
Okay, so we come to that part of the show and it's the very last question, and you all know what that is. It's the Desert Island Disc
Fabulous
thing. Anna.
Hi. So I found this really difficult to pin down, actually.
That was the idea.
Yeah, I know. It is. I mean, I listen to Desert Islanders and it is very difficult. Yeah. The music side of things, I listen to quite a lot of 80s stuff when I'm working, practically. Okay. But I think the one that I go back to most often, and it's something that I can listen to when I'm sort of writing things as well, is actually Kate Bush, Hands of Love album. That is a big, it's one of those albums that I can just kind of, I zone in and out of and I can work to without it kind of interfering too much. So
I adore Kate Bush.
Yeah. There's a lot of her stuff later stuff I don't like, but The Hands of Love is just the perfect album for me. I love all of her
stuff. I don't like her early stuff.
Yeah, so that's that. The film, again, it's just like, you know, I'm a big MCU fan, all of those kind of like big blockbusters. I love those. But the one that I would go back to, I watch sort of like a rainy Sunday afternoon when you've been out for a walk and you just want something to chill to, is actually a 1970s film called Robin and Marion. I don't know if you've seen it. It's Sean Connery and Audrey Hepburn and Robert Shaw. It's Robin Hood once he's been to the Crusades and come back, and he's sort of come back as an older person, and Marion's been off being a nun and an abbess. And it's sort of about their reconnecting later on in life.
Okay.
But there's also a bit of, Robert Shaw plays the Sheriff of Nottingham, so there's a bit of them hacking lumps out of each other, which is probably my reenactment side.
Okay.
But I quite like that side of it as well. Yeah. So that's the film. And book, actually, I haven't been able to choose a book because my favourite book is always the book I'm currently reading.
What are you currently reading?
I read it all the time.
Is it Mills and Boone?
No, I do not read Mills and Boone. Chick flicks, no. Chick flick, no. I'm very big on sci-fi stuff. I kind of grew up on Pratchett.
Okay.
Very big on historical fiction and kind of like older historical fiction. Actually, the one I'm reading at the moment is the Isochon book.
Okay.
Because I dipped into it for my project.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't read a whole book when you're kind of researching things. Yeah. And it was one of the areas that I really enjoyed, and I really took, you know, I really liked what they were doing. So I just decided to read the whole book. So I'm actually reading that at the moment. So that is my current book.
Yeah.
Nice. Book for me, I tend to only read when I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
So Dan Brown, but I love podcasts, true crime type of thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, aside from this, Robbie.
Obviously.
Music would be house music.
Okay.
But I am quite eclectic. Well, I can kind of, sorry, go on.
House music is a bit
wide.
Name something.
Oh, crumbs.
I'm going to put you under pressure here. You've got to choose.
Yeah. A funky house, that kind of
genre.
But I do like anything, to be fair. I'll listen to anything from, you know, a bit kind of rocky, My Chemical Romance, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Depends what you're kind of doing in the workshop as well, how fast you want to get through something.
Yeah.
And films, Harry Potter, I could watch over and over again. Love them.
Love it. Lucy?
Well, if that's not a film, probably, I mean, I've got a 12-year-old who is mad on Harry Potter, and she sort of rewatches them all the time. And she listens to them as well, so I've always got the steam fries normally talking somewhere in my house.
Yeah.
Books, oh my god, I've gone from books to films. Books I find really difficult. I'm probably a bit more of a chick sort of, I know. But I like a bit of romance.
That's fine.
You know. But you know, there's one book that really stands out for me, and it's actually like a self-help book, so that's really embarrassing. But it's How to Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. And I can honestly say I have read that book 3 times. And it's really old, but it's just got some amazing advice in there. Live in day-tight compartments. That's the thing that always stands out for me. Yeah, so that's a bit sad. My favourite book is a self-help book, which tells you everything you need to know about me.
I love it.
Film. If I had to absolutely choose a film that I would sit down and watch every day without getting bored, it would be Jaws.
Jaws?
Yes.
Wow.
The first one.
Yeah, not the second one. Yeah.
Definitely not the third.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Love that film. I think it's just a nostalgia thing. Yeah, wow. Is that a bit odd?
No, there we go.
Music is impossible for me. I listen to lots of different music, but ultimately at my heart, probably when I was in my youth, in the 90s, I was a bit of a grunge girl. I was a bit of a red hair and boots and earring in my head.
Yeah, I was just the same. Yeah.
Were you? Yeah. I can imagine, Robbie. I've always got back to three or four of my top favourite songs, but if I absolutely had to pick one, it would be 23 by Jimmy Eat World. That would be my favourite song of all time.
I have not got a clue what that is, so that makes me have to go and explore that now. Brilliant.
Closely followed by Time After Time by Cindy Lauper.
Oh my lord.
Absolute favourite song.
Oh my lord. Yeah. Okay.
There
well,
we go. On that note.
On that dire note. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real delight to talk to you. Real delight. I really enjoyed it. It's been lovely being here at Bristol Collective as well. So brilliant. Hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If you have, please share and do all the things you're supposed to do with the podcast. And if you haven't, well, that's fine. Okay. Thanks very much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.